Like, no, like, no, the hour. These are the songs of our lives.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Songs of Our Lives. I'm Brad Rose. I'm an artist, composer, a writer, founder of Foxy Digitalis, and somebody who thinks about music and sound far more than is healthy. Each week, I invite on guests to talk about the songs and the music that has meant a lot to them and left its mark. Previous guests include Darius Jones, Chuck Johnson, Amelia Courthouse, Molly Obomsawin, Claire Rousset, so many more. This week, I am so excited to have Tomin. So this one feels like it's like a thing that's sort of coming full circle or something. But Tomin has two records out this year on International Anthem. One compiles some previously self-released EPs that he did into one record, both of which are fabulous. And the record is double fabulous because they're, you know, whatever. But and then there's his new record. It's all songs he composed. He put together an incredible band. It's called A Willed and Conscious Balance. It's also out on International Anthem. Comes out November 1st. So by the time you're hearing this, it's probably out. And yeah, this was, so I didn't even realize this, but before we started recording, he was telling me that, so I wrote about one of those EPs back in like 2021, I guess. Cause he was saying it was the first time anybody had written something about his solo music, and that like kind of warmed my heart, made me feel really good. It was even back when Foxy Digitalis, like when it first came back and it was a Substack, so that was super early. And I remember that. I remember that review. I remember first hearing his work, which was, I believe, Angel Bot Dawood was talking about it on Instagram. And as I said to him, if Angel recommends something, you best go listen to it, because there is somebody who will not steer you wrong. But yeah, so I was so excited, like when this record got announced, and I was like, this is the opportunity, we're going to do this. And it was as delightful, actually it was more delightful than I could have ever hoped. And talking to him about this music, seeing like what, you know, what he picked and had to say about it. I say this much at some point, I think in the episode, but it really became quite clear why his music resonates so deeply with me. So this was beautiful. And I can't recommend the record enough. Just both of them. Just check out his stuff. He's a delight. So, recorded this semi-recently. And like I said, it was a blast. I hope you all enjoy it. My guest today is a multi-instrumentalist, composer, arranger, and a bioinformatician. Took that straight from the labels copy, because don't they go said that on the show. Anyway, it's Tomin. Welcome to the show.
Yay.
What is a bioinformatician?
That's a good question. The answer seems to be evading everyone, but I prepared this one. So a bioinformatician is a specialist who uses computer science to analyze large data sets in biology for research and clinical purposes. But I guess in a non sort of textbook definition sense, it's kind of like, you know, I feel like big data was sort of like a buzzword for a long time.
Right.
And like, I feel like often sort of the sort of applications you'd hear that sort of being relevant to were sort of like banking primarily, sort of like, stuff like that. You know, it turns out like genomes are kind of the biggest data. It's like the thing that actually makes us all unique. Like forget your government name. Like you have an independent, unique copy of DNA. So, you know, social security, all of that's like compromisable,
but right.
The only thing that is really, truly you is your like, you know, genetic readout. So I would say bioinformaticians are sort of big data slash data scientist people who do biological research, more or less. Okay. And it's like a very hand wavy answer there, but you know, there's some stats involved, there's some computer science involved, there's some biology involved. It's sort of the intersection of those things.
Yeah. Okay, man, that sounds pretty fascinating, actually. But I will not go down that rabbit hole because.
I don't want to talk about work.
exactly. So we will talk. So you have two records out this year, but one is a reissue of some self-release stuff, which I love, but we're not going to talk about that really. The big thing, November 1st, A Willed and Conscious Balance comes out on International Anthem. And wow. Like that, how long in the making has this been?
So that's also interesting. I would say not long. Indirectly. So most of the songs I wrote previous to sort of any of the, let's say, label related stuff going down. Mm-hmm. So I mean, if you start from like the date of the composition of the first song, then I don't know, maybe a couple of years. But I mean, really honestly, I think, you know, Alejandro over at the label asked me to open for Ben Lamar Gay last year, and that was, I think that was like an October 30th, maybe October 29th show. And then, you know, I mean, contracts were probably inked up in January, hit the studio in February, like, man, you know,
quick.
I mean, yeah, I was somewhat adamant about it being quick. So it's really like, you know, and you know, we obviously turned it in a while ago for it to be coming out in 2 weeks. So I would say like the entire process start to finish was maybe 6 months, if that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I mean, because especially these days, it feels like everything takes 5 years or something.
Oh, yeah. And I'm so not, I don't have the demeanor for that. I don't have the, like, I don't have the stamina for that. Like, I think at some point I even said, you know, I'd rather regret that we didn't spend 2 more weeks with it than, you know, accidentally spend like, you know, 2 additional months with it. You know,
right.
So that's like, yeah.
That's, I relate to that too. I have a lot of friends who they make records over years and years, and I've tried, but I never get there. I'm like, okay, I'm done with this. I gotta do something else. One of the things that are beyond, like, the originals are awesome, but I love the, like, different pieces you reimagine. I'm kind of curious, like, how you, like, picked those, or like, what about those pieces in particular, and sort of like maybe even how those pieces kind of help shape the sonic identity of the record.
I guess, like, just a sort of general statement on covers or standards. I mean, I think weirdly it's like very out of fashion these days to like play other people's music, which is incredible, because, like, I mean, I hear a lot of music I like. It seems almost silly to sort of not do so, and you know, it's even a little bit bimodal. I feel like either you're not doing it at all, or you're kind of particularly like doing it, like that's all you do. So, you know, of course, you know, the first record, Floris Cantos, I call it, you know, it's almost all, you know, covers or standards or however you want to look at it. And, you know, that just has everything to do with the fact that all of those compositions, all of those composers, you know, deserve their flowers and their, and, you know, yeah, and those songs are great. But in terms of the two on this particular record, I guess in order, Man of Words is, to me, a direction compositionally that I kind of wish jazz had sort of stuck with a little bit more, which is just like sort of, it's just like this like lush, like sort of under motif or something like this, mm-hmm. that sort of the soloist plays over. And it's just like, it's very much about like expression. And so I feel like as a composer, I sort of took inspiration from that particular Booker Little tune. I think a lot of it, like I would say most of the songs on the record, are basically composed in that sort of space, like, of just sort of having sort of something like a basis to work with, but it not being like overly heady and also not like overly simple, or, you know, I'm just, you know, listenable, beautiful music, right? So that one's like just always, I think that from like the moment I first heard it, I was just like, wow, this is so like dark and brooding, but also like so like the intention is so clear, again, without it being sort of overly complicated. And then Humility in the Light of the Creator just like was one of those songs I heard that sort of meaningfully changed my like trajectory as a human being. I think that dates back to like when I was in high school and, you know, just sort of digging into like AACM stuff and like sort of going down my free jazz rabbit hole and just sort of, yeah, I mean, that one, I, you know, kind of almost in the reverse, it's kind of more built up on sort of this like melody that is, again, not sort of overly complicated, and then sort of what's actually happening under it is sort of more the like,
right.
You know, like cool, like sort of improvisational thing. And I love that, man. Like, I just love, like, you know, sort of the pairing of like through composed bits with improvisational bits, obviously, as a jazz person.
Right.
And yeah, I think they just sort of round out the sort of the two songs, the two covers, I guess they sort of round out the sort of compositional space, compositional universe I'd like to sort of place myself in.
Yeah, I like that, thinking about Humility in the Light of the Creator. I think of it like your description of, you know, the melody. I don't know, I was thinking about this a week or so ago, like my daughter has this music box, and thinking about, it's like, you know, you see the thing spinning, but there's all this complicated stuff you don't see underneath it,
right?
And it's like that music like that is so interesting to me, where, like you said, it's this, the thing that you hear is kind of straightforward and simple, but there's this sea of something other, like on another planet practically happening to hold it up,
right?
So yeah, I'm curious, like with that song, because it, like you just said, it was like one, an early, like pretty personally significant early on. How did it feel like revisiting that now, as you know, as you've gotten further, like you're composing, you're doing all this stuff, and
right. Honestly, I mean, I kind of, I don't know. That's a good question. it felt cool. I mean, I actually obviously did, actually previously have done a sort of cover of it, but, and actually it almost wasn't on A World in Conscious Balance. I think I probably made the decision that week for us to record it. And then I think the first time we played it through successfully was like in studio. Like, and that's because I showed up with like sheet music that morning, like, you know, so you know, I guess it's vindicating. Like, the word that comes to mind is kind of vindicating. It's like, you know, here's a piece of music that I've always sort of held up as like a, you know, just perfect example of sort of like emotion meets sort of execution meets sort of, you know, what have you. And then, I mean, I'll probably say it a few dozen times, but like, I just love my band so much. They just like, they crushed that. Like, they just super crushed that. I mean, it is the last track on the record, and that particular take of it was actually the very last thing we recorded. Like,
oh, wow.
Like, you know, I was like, oh, we got 3 minutes left, guys. Let's do that one more time. So vindicating, I think, is the word that comes to mind. I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't know exactly in what way, but it feels very right. Yeah.
Yes. Well, it's a good segue. Speaking of your band, like, yeah, the band is, it's like an all-star cast.
I know.
Did you write this specifically with those people in mind, like when you were writing this stuff?
Right. No. I will say the band is total cheat codes. Like literally up, down, down, left, right, A, B.
A, B, start.
Yeah. Right, you know, to like perfect cheat codes. But no, I think there's actually only one tune on the record of like all the originals that I like wrote for the like musicians and instrumentation particularly.
Wow.
That's probably Movement. And yeah, the rest of them You know, I mean, Life, Love, the singles that are out at this point, like those were like initially like sort of solo piano pieces, you know, or keyboard pieces, I guess. Not even ever heard either of them on a piano. yeah, and then, yeah, so much of that, yeah, was very much not with like a set head of like, you know, two cellists, right, a bassist, a drummer, you know, like keyboard, trumpet, like, you know, I hadn't sort of worked all that out. There's only really one song on the record that like in particular was like, yes, okay, I have this like dream team to work with, let me write something that like is like specific to this, right, cast. Yeah,
yeah, it's, I remember I saw the, like, I got like the promo email, and I was excited at first just because like I knew your work, and then I saw the band and I was just like, oh my god,
no, I know,
this
I
is
know,
like a dream. I mean,
dude, it's my dream.
Yeah, like I'm so excited about the two cellists. Like, I think that was like, I mean, I love everybody involved in this.
Yes,
like,
yes, yeah.
You know, but gosh, I was so excited, and my daughter just started playing the cello like a few months ago.
Awesome, super sick.
So I don't think she'd probably want to hear this record right now. She'd probably just look at me like, Dad, I don't want to hear a weird jazz record.
I hope she enjoys it. She's weirdly the target audience. I mean, I would love for someone with just a burgeoning interest in music to be like, wait, this is kind of cool.
Yeah, well, that's the hope. That's like always, you know, it's like you got to figure out the ways to slide, because she's 11, and so.
Right, I know.
Either I'm like the coolest person in the room for a minute, or I'm the lamest.
Right. Totally understood.
But yeah, so how did the band sort of come together? Just
sure. I mean, in brief, you know, I guess, yeah, it kind of goes back to Angel a little bit. Mm-hmm. So Angel and Jamie, rest in peace, sort of put together a showcase of some sort. They called it like Angel and Jamie and Friends. and this happened in like summer 2021, so I guess I was in the Angel side of Friends. Okay. and Chesare and Luke in particular were in the sort of Jamie side, yeah, of Friends. And so we all sort of played this, and Tiana at the time was in the Angel side of Friends. And so we, like, I mean Angel and I were just actually gushing afterwards about how good Tiana, Chesare, and Luke sounded together. So that's just like basically straight lifted from that date.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And then I also met Lester right around then. You know, obviously with the Chalice and the Fire Die. So, you know, we sort of took a liking to each other, which is cool. And then Linton and Clarita are, so my trumpet player and the other cellist, who's, I always say this, but she's the string section leader. we go back to our like standing on the corner days. Oh, wow. So I had 40 time, I guess like now, like 5 years ago, but for a time I'd sort of been a part of the sort of performing ensemble. and that time at the two of them. So it's sort of just been like braiding through like, sort of different musical experiences and sort of pulling from different places. But it's funny that you mentioned the two cellos specifically, because I, in almost the worst possible way, know so many different bands with one cellist, and I was like, well, you know, it's kind of like, oh, maybe if I do two, it'll be better.
You know, it'd be better than one cello, two cellos.
Yeah, literally, it's such a like almost, like it's almost like an immature thought. Like, but I mean, like, listen, I think it works. I think it sounds sick. I sort of pulled, you know, and yeah, I mean, it's true. Like individually, I could probably gush about all of them. I'll save you the trouble. But like, there's a lot that I could say about everyone. And I would say maybe the general thing that sort of ties everyone through is these are people who are very like conceptual players. Like, so, mm-hmm. So kind of going back to those two covers, I guess, that appear on the record, like, I think of those as like conceptual songs. I hate to sort of use conceptual as like an adjective here, but I think what I mean more is like, you know, just to spotlight Linson for a second, I love him to death. You know, he's a great trumpet player, but he's not really like, I don't think he's like what comes to mind when you think of like trumpet play. Like, he's not kind of trying to be in your face, like all over the place, like playing up and down. Like, he's trying to like express a thought. Like, he's trying to express a feeling. He's trying to sort of deliver a concept. So I feel like the real sort of through line is like, you know, these are all incredible musicians, but it's also like having sort of that synergistic sort of approach that sort of like, I am playing with these other people. I'm part of a whole. I can sort of work with the whole thing and sort of bring something sort of very beautiful out of all of that. I didn't want an all-star cast of like super soloists who like couldn't play together, you know, like, you know.
Yeah, no, I think that's really, I think that's, I don't know, I think that comes through. I like it.
That's the, that's part of the wielding conscious balance, bro. Yeah. Like, that's sort of the, not to be corny with this, the album title, but you know, it is a, you know, it was intended to feel like, you know, I you know, similarly as the band leader, I didn't want you to be listening to the record like, okay, Tomine solo number 17, like, you know, like, like, well, sure, like, this Tomine guy really likes himself or something, like,
right,
yeah,
that's awesome. Well, I could talk about this for a while, and there and some of your picks that we have coming up, I think we'll tie into the record for sure. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to use this to awkwardly segue into the reason that we're here, which is to talk about some songs.
Yes.
And as always, we will begin with, what is the first song that you remember?
Yes. Okay. So in this case, I had to really think a little bit, because I guess like I was what, like, 3 in 2000, which is giving away my age, but like it was a pretty good time for music, like coming right off the 90s, like, you know, like I feel like music videos were still like very much like you know, and my parents, I kind of had to like filter out other people's recollection of like songs I entered at the time, like, you know, I used to run up to the screen and you know, like stand like an inch from the TV when certain music videos would come on, but I don't like remember that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think so. In this case, the answer is "No Scrubs" by TLC. Wow. Yeah, I mean, that was one of many videos I used to run up, and you know, in particular, I was like, man, yeah, I like seriously remember, I, you know, I remember being like 11 or 12 and being like, huh, that's what that song was about. Cause you know, I didn't understand it as a kid. And it's only taken on sort of greater proportions as I've become a young adult and you know, sort of eventually met the archetypal character that the song's about. So, yeah, so that's the very first one.
Yeah, that's, man, I hadn't heard this song in a minute.
Yeah, yeah.
God, but it is such a bop.
Yeah, God, classic. Like,
and I love the one thing that really stood out to me when I was listening. I was like, God, like the acoustic guitar on here,
right?
Just, it's so kind of weird, but it adds, it makes it so this distinct sort of timbral element to it that I don't know. I mean, it's all about their voices and the hook, of course.
Yeah, but yeah.
All those other, you know, I don't know. That's the stuff I love about like music like this, and it's you know, you think of like the idea of like songcraft or whatever,
right?
It's like all these little decisions or these things that go in, and it's like that's why this is like lasted, like stood the test of time. It's because of seemingly how much thought. Well, no, the reason it's lasted this test of time is because they're awesome,
right?
But those, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know, that was the music nerd thing in me. It was like, oh wow, the acoustic guitar part, that's
No, I mean, listen, believe me, when I listened back to it, just, you know, to refresh myself, I was like, no way, this was the instrumental on this track. Like, you know, it almost feels like it should have been like a weird synth or something, you know, like, and it really was very much like, this is a guitar line you could hear on something else, like just like really anything else.
I don't know.
I
don't know. And I think I'm always drawn to stuff like that where it's like, on paper, this makes no sense. Like, but. Right. It works. Well, that's awesome. What a place to start. Well, what's a song that either makes you cry or makes you feel like feel in that way.
Right, right. So, I mean, this one, I mean, I already said it, but I'll say it again. Rest in peace, Jamie Branch. This one's Theme Nothing by Jamie Branch. Just like, I can't listen to the first like 4 seconds of it without tearing up. Like, I put it on all the time, right?
Right.
But just the eye stinging hasn't stopped yet. So that's just that one. I honestly was trying to come up with, this one was another one where it's like, huh, like what sort of moves me in that direction?
Right.
And then I was, of course, just going down my own sort of personal playlist. And I was like, yeah, well, this is the one that actually physically triggers this, this reaction. I think the one time I had the great pleasure of seeing Flyer die, it was like the set closer. So I think was like on that particular day. I don't know if she did that in general. It's certainly the last one on the live record too.
Yeah.
But yeah, that one still gets me.
Yeah, I had a hard time listening to it. Like, I mean, I still listen to Jamie's stuff on a semi-regular, but there's something about, I don't know, like what it is about this song compared to some others. But when I was prepping for this, it was just, yeah, I was like, I don't know if this is what this is the answer for, but this is getting me.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's a lot tied to it beyond just the song at this point, but right. Like, man. It's still hard to think of, like, we live in a world without.
Yeah, dude. Jamie, I mean, dude. Yeah. That one, still hurts.
I was thinking about this too. Like, there's still nothing that sounds like this. Like, that sounds like Flyer.
Yeah. No. I mean, we lost out. Like,
I know.
And then, you know, for the like Flyer Die, like three to be like such an insane record. And it's like, dog, like,
I know.
Yeah. So
I know.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, now that we're all bummed out.
Yes.
What's something that'll put you in a better mood? What can we talk about now that will
that will lift us a little bit? So I'm not great at pronouncing this.
Okay.
And I'm definitely going to butcher it, but I'm going to say Maimuna. I think it's an Arabic word by Balake Sissoko. That one, so better mood for me is a very, very subjective thing.
Sure.
I don't think there's a song that can make me happy if I'm unhappy.
Right.
So I actually had to think about this one a little too. And I think the sort of thing I nailed down on was, you know, this is off of a record. This was first track off of a record called At Peace. And I think when I am in any sort of unpleasant emotional state, I sort of like seek peace. Like I'd like to be sort of reset to sort of some kind of calm. So this one is just like, I mean, the core is like such a beautiful instrument. It's like, it's like insane. It's like, what, like a harp guitar plus, harp guitar plus. And I can throw it on literally in any head state. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, this was I used to, like, in high school, like I used to go to like the record store and buy CDs all the time. So like, this is one of those things where like I walked in and they were playing it, and I was like what the heck is this? And I definitely picked that up on that particular occasion. And then I think the title itself means like auspicious, blessed, loved, fortunate one or something like this. It's definitely like, just always levels me out.
Mm-hmm. I feel like, and this is kind of hyperbolic, but I feel like this is like one of the most beautiful pieces of music ever written.
It's up there.
And I've never seen him live. Like, I've seen, like, I was watching videos of him playing this, and it just, it seems impossible. Like, watching him play the kora is like watching art being made or something. Incredible. And kind of what you were talking about with your band, how it's like they are also like technically proficient, could play anything, but like the thing that, how they're very like, it's that it's not approached that way, you know? I mean,
that's how I feel, like, hey, I'm a virtuoso, like, look at me, like,
right, it's like I'm gonna take that and channel it into like creating these like feelings and these ideas and all, you know. I feel like that's what he reminds me of too, like he is
for sure.
Oh my gosh,
I mean, when I saw that he and Nicole Mitchell like were doing like a collab album, I like literally was like, who is just forcing me to spend money? I cannot save that dollar if there's like a if there's like a gun to my head. I'd be like, I'm sorry, I'm spending it.
It's like either I'm not. It's like I'm not going to eat today. Like I'm sorry because I saw that get announced. It was just it's like wow. Somebody went inside my brain and was like, who are two of the people that you admire the most and will put them together? And it's awesome too.
So good.
I mean, that's the least surprising thing.
Not even like a little bit.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. Oh, it's great. Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah. What do you mean? But yeah, this, I can relate to that too. Cause I don't know if there is a song that will make me happy, but this music, it's so like calming and just I love this.
Yeah.
Okay, everybody's favorite question. What is objectively the greatest the best song of all time?
So I think I maybe had an easier time with this than most people.
Awesome.
this one, obviously almost everything in this list minus the ones I will disparage later, almost everything in this list I think sort of has its has its like case for being
you can make a case for a lot of the songs that you picked.
right but I think in particular The Storyteller by Hannibal Marvin Peterson. So Hannibal was like a huge, huge formative influence as well. I mean, I was pushing him on everyone at some point in my life. And, you know, probably a non-trivial contributing factor to me picking up the trumpet.
Awesome.
But this one is like, it was actually one of those songs that like when I first showed it to someone, I have a good friend in particular who I've stayed very close with over the years who like they were like, wait, do you understand how good this is? And I was like, I mean, yeah, I just sent it to you. But they were like, no, this is crazy. And it almost like recontextualized it for like, you know, even sort of shopping it out to my friend.
Right.
I was like, why did this person take to this one so much? But you know, I think the reason it's the answer to this question for me is because it is very much a beautiful like confluence of like again sort of through composed and improvised like music, so as far as I can tell there is like a melody, and it's sort of like it vaguely sort of like hinted at in sort of the piano intro, but certainly once the cello comes in, like that's probably the closest to like the most like direct formulation of it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's still got that sort of like, you know, shout out cello. That's sort of like, yeah. Like that's sort of like like cellist vibe here. That's another one cello situation.
Yeah.
Then this like the tenor sax, which is of course sort of like ubiquitous in jazz, I feel. But like, you know, that sort of like kind of more like free out scronky like sort of mm-hmm. reading of it. And then of course like the, you know, the trumpet follows it up. It's sort of again like sort of a sort of more bigger, larger than life version of it. It just sort of feels like it's a track that like builds, like it's actually kind of long, mm-hmm. but you don't have the impression that you're listening to like whatever it is, like 8 minutes of music while you're listening to it. You're just like, oh, and then this thing happened and that was beautiful. Oh, and now this other thing's happened. Right? Like, you know, you're like, oh, is this the same song? Like, you know, but it is, it so clearly is. But yeah, I think it's such a beautiful self-contained universe of like, this is the melody and like this is different people reading the melody and everyone kind of coming together and sort of making, you know, something very cohesive. Mm-hmm. Again, sort of bigger than sort of any individual person on the song, you know.
Yeah, it always kind of also feel to me, it always felt like it has like almost like a narrative to it.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
like and that like the way it doesn't feel like 8 minutes, it just it's this, yeah, it's like this self-contained story, or you know, and it's just like, oh, it's and yeah, it's I also feel like this is kind of a super underappreciated record, or at least
are you kidding, dude? I feel like I picked up a copy of the Angels of Atlanta at a record store, I want to say maybe like 8 years ago, for like way less than I would have spent. Like if they had just like quadrupled the price, I probably would have still bought it, like at the price that would have been four times. I'm glad it's on my shelf, like, you know, I'm glad I have it and I didn't break the bank for it. But I mean, it's a crazy heavy record. I mean, I was having a hard time picking a song off the record.
Right.
Even, I mean, you know, yeah. Like,
right. The whole record, yeah. And shout out to Cecil McBee on bass, yes, Tulsa native. So
there you go.
It's awesome pick. I feel like I've showed this to a lot of people, and it's but most everybody out, like friends of mine who are into like jazz and stuff even are like, oh, I've never heard this. I'm like, how have you not heard this?
No, it's like criminally underrated. Like it's a severe oversight. society society's lacking in almost everything. Sure. But come on, y'all don't want to just like enjoy sound for a few minutes. Like low hanging fruit. No morality involved. Like
yes. So yeah, if anybody takes anything away from this episode of the show, go listen.
Yeah, please. Seriously. You're missing out on the best music, objectively.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's science, and you're a scientist, so can't argue that.
Scientist engineer. I have to push back against the science allegations, because scientists can be very particular.
Well, oh, fair enough. You're ruining my argument here. Okay, well, what's a song you used to love, but now, like, if you heard it recently, or if you think about it now, you're just like, maybe not so much.
Sure. So this one, I really have so much admiration for this artist. It's Little Pocket Sized Demons by Henry Threadgill. Henry Threadgill's like just amazing, and I feel like this song, I cannot slander it. I mean, Brandon Ross on guitar, just shout out.
Oh,
like,
my God.
Dear Lord, like a beast. I mean, that's criminally under, like super underrated for being like, just, I mean, wow. And like
the
no
band
words.
On here is, the band on this is wild too, because it's like two guitarists, a tuba, a French horn.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say Very, Very Circus, like this particular band is probably the thing I most like fashioned mine after.
Oh, yeah.
Like this is like sonically where my brain was when I was like trying to put together the pieces. And again, so no, nothing like Henry Threadgill, if you ever hear this, I love all of your music. Like, it's more that and I mean how frustrated was I not to be at Big Ears when they did like oh my God, you do not understand. I was like literally screaming like in my house. I was like, how did I not know? I would have bought tickets months ago. Like I was so livid. But anyway, as far as the song itself, right. As far as the song itself, though, I think this was like maybe the actual first piece of his music I think I heard. And I think like it's not that I think empirically does less for me. It's that like I've listened to all of the Very, Very Circus records now. I have other tracks that I maybe enjoy over it now. Yeah. Even on that record, I think like this one is like the album opener. I think the album closer on that record is like maybe my favorite on that record. So it's just like a, you know, I was probably shopping this particular tune around to people as like a, hey, you should get into this guy. You know, it's like kind of, you know, maybe way over, it's still over my head. which is to say nothing of the stuff he's made since, you know, it's like super over my head. But like, I think where his discography is concerned, yeah. I think weirdly this often gets placed towards the top, and then I think there's just so much more that like there's so much more like depth and richness in some of the other, like, totally not that that's lacking here, but like, yeah, just like there are some tunes where you're like, music can sound like this,
right?
And like and like this one I feel like is closer to like weird thing to say about Threadgill, but like accessible. So it's again super not slander, just it occurs to me that I don't put this one on anymore. Actually, like I put on other tunes.
That totally makes sense. That framing, I have a similar experience with a different artist, but you pick something by this artist, so I'm not going to get into the story now because that makes so much sense. Like, there are things where it's like, yeah, this was like the first thing I heard and it blew my mind. And then as I heard more, it was like, okay, yeah, that's good, but holy, yeah,
right, like obviously it's still like this person's work, but like,
right,
but like, wait, why are all these other ones like insane?
Right, right. I love that kind of approach to this answer. Okay, this is a question that trips people up a bit, but what's a song people hate? Some group people hate. I don't know who they are. Maybe it, I don't know, but they hate it, and you don't care because you love it anyway.
Well, this one was easy. I mean, again, Addition to, aka Ascension by John Coltrane. I am a free jazz fan, and that means that you know, if Blue Train or Giant Steps or My Favorite Things is your train, good for you. Yeah. And all of those are great records. I really especially love sort of looking at sort of his discography, sort of the evolution over time. Like, I'm pretty sure Ascension was recorded while he was getting all sorts of love for like A Love Supreme. So imagine being Train. You could just sit back and like just eat up the love for A Love Supreme, which, you know, has literally never waned. Like, you know, like, that remains like a watershed. Everyone goes to that one. Even if I had to play, you know, one Coltrane tune for someone, it probably would be Acknowledgement or something, right? But man, like, it was like, frankly, a spiritual experience for me when I first heard Ascension. Just like an insanely good record. And like, I mean, I think I maybe heard this like apocryphal story that like, you know, they were supposed to do like a third take of it. And like Elvin Jones just like stood up and threw his like snare drum against the wall. I was like, I'm not doing that again. But you know, whether or not that's true, I actually think it's some of Elvin Jones' like best recorded drumming like ever. Like, I just, he's definitely like the anchor on this date. And I mean, just like ushers in every, like everything that happens on the whole record. Like, for people who can physically listen to this record without objecting severely to what it is, go back and really listen to Elvin drum on that one. Like, that's like, I mean, he like it's crazy. I mean, like, get in that again, like, you know, like I love how like just like strong and like sort of commanding the sort of performance on that one is. So that's really like that's the thing. I mean, beyond all the beautiful soloists and the sort of greater composition being what it is, I'm absolutely floored. Elvin Jones is my favorite drummer, and this is my favorite like Elvin Jones performance by far.
Man, so this is so back to what you're saying about thread like this. All, oh my god, I relate to all this so much. So Blue Train was maybe the first jazz record I think I ever heard.
Sure,
and you know, kind of blew my mind. Like, I worked with this guy. This was when I think I was like 18 or something, 18 or 19, and we would talk about music, and he was like, he played saxophone, he was into jazz. And so for my birthday that year, he bought me Blue Train on CD.
Sure.
And it was, and so then we kind of would just get together after work and like drink beer and listen to jazz CDs. Like, I'd go to Barnes and Noble when I get my paycheck and just buy random shit.
Dude, I know the feeling.
And so like, so, but I remember I loved Coltrane. I was like, okay. And I bought Ascension and put it on, and it just blew my brain wide open.
Yeah.
And so like going back, so like Blue Train is it's great, but it's, I don't love it like I loved it in the beginning.
Right. And I mean, frankly, I don't think he did. You know what I mean? Like, I think by 65, Coltrane wasn't like, well, you know, that 57 date was cool. Like, you know,
he'd moved on to other planets by that.
Right, like, literally.
But yeah, this was, I remember just thinking, like, I'd never heard music like this before.
No.
Oh, God. I love this record. It's, I don't know. I don't know if I could pick a favorite Coltrane record, but if I had to, it's probably this. But
probably same. Like, you know, which is again hard. Like, you're like, well, I mean, do I really not want to say these eight other records?
Right. Like, but there's just something about, and I think your point about Elvin is so spot on. I mean, it's just like, he, I don't know, it just feels like he was just like, I'm, fuck it, I'm taking control of this. Like,
he's like, I feel like he showed up to the session. Was like, there's 11 people in here. Like, like, you know, like, I'm the only person who's solely playing the instrument. Right. That I, like, you know, there's two basses, there's two treble players, there's like three tenor saxophone players, there's a couple of saxophone, you know, like, it's like, what's happening today?
Yeah. I gotta be three drummers. All
right. Right. I guess McCoy Tyner's the only, like, he's also just playing piano. But man, like, I mean, dude, Elvin, like, just totally destroyed that before. I mean, I could listen to that any. Right. Yeah. I might throw it on after this.
Yeah, I think I might, much to my kids' chagrin. But
yeah, like, so that's not going to be popular with your 11-year-old.
Maybe I'll put headphones on. But
yeah.
But yeah, God. Oh, what a, yeah. Mm, love it. Okay.
Well, I'm glad you don't hate it. No, I do know that there are fans that are like, what is this? This is anti-music, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah,
I mean, Coltrane had stopped recording after Love Supreme. Can you imagine saying that? You know, et cetera.
Yeah.
So
I know. Yeah, I mean, my buddy who got me back, he never, right. And he was just like, "What the hell is this?" Like, he was like, "This is not for me." I was like, wow. "Are you kidding me?"
Right.
This is. I need to know. Like, and that was. I was like, "What is free jazz?" Oh right. My god! This right. is. I need to know everything about this.
Right. Right.
And
yeah, definitely the gateway drug to free jazz. Yes, for sure. Yeah.
Yes. I love it. Okay. let's go from Ascension to what's the most romantic song?
Imagine it's like Ascension now.
Yeah.
So this one is Daydreaming by Aretha Franklin. Yeah.
Oh, man.
That's kind of hard to argue with. I got to be honest with you, like, there's probably like more romantic lyrics in the world, but something about like the delivery. Like, you know, like that like intro and outro, where it's sort of like you yourself get the impression of like, well, I'm daydreaming about someone I'm really infatuated with. Like, you could not be currently in love listening to that song.
Right.
Like, man, that sounds really good. Like, you know, I want to, you know, like, I can't do it. I'm not gonna try to refit it. But oh my god, just delivery, like just everything about that song to me is like, there's just no misses. Like it's mm-hmm. man, it hits me like right in the heart. Like I want to go wherever they're going, which is wherever.
Right. I love that's like that like the whole thing, and it leads up to that where I don't care. Like,
right.
It's just like
literally somewhere with you. You know?
Yeah. Oh gosh.
It's, what a beautiful. Oof.
I know. The feeling of the song, like, I don't even know. It's, there's like this carefree.
No,
like,
yeah.
I'm so in love, infatuated. I don't care. Like, oh.
Yeah.
We all want to have that feeling, right?
Like, yes, yes, yes. And again, it's sort of like, I don't know. It's like, it makes you start daydreaming about whatever. Like, you just, like, it's like the title, it's a home run. It's a not that, like, you know, like Aretha isn't like you know, like, but it's a if I had to pick a favorite Aretha tune, it's this one. And that's again imagine imagine having to do that, like, you know.
No, thank you.
Right
Well, what's the song that changed your perspective on an artist?
Yeah, so this one is Cherenum by Alice Coltrane, and that just has everything to do with the fact that I unfortunately, at a naive point in time, but, you know, she was just like a pianist, harpist, you know, sure, you know, like I was sort of like, and then not in a bad way, just like a, like, you know, I think I sort of pigeonholed her without realizing, into like sort of like an instrumentalist, and, you know, listen, I am eventually going to leverage the fact that like more than half of my band can sing very well. I'm gonna figure that out. Like, they can, like most of these people have chops, man, like vocally chops. Listening to, you know, Taraya sings for the first time, you know, on YouTube back before Impulse did the thing, you know, like
the real version.
Right I mean, listen, I'm holding out hope that one day I'll have enough money to buy that tape. And actually, I don't know if you saw the Flores Contes tape, but it's literally a direct rip. Like, I mean, I designed it.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I
designed it exactly in the style of the Taraya Sings tape.
Like, oh, exactly, my God.
Like, it's like a white gold label, black lettering. Okay. Like it was just so much a call out to this particular record.
And, oh my God. Okay.
And yeah, so the perspective shift was just hearing her voice and then hearing her like sort of do the sort of call and response. Like, you know, a lot of stuff that we sort of think about is sort of idiomatic to say like jazz or, you know, whatever, but like sort of in this sort of devotional context. Like, I mean, again, it was just one of those like universe expanding things where I was like, okay, Alice, you can do anything. You can do literally anything. And it's just so gorgeous. And like, yeah, it obviously speaks to some of her influences in terms of like, you know, Indian classical and like stuff like that. But like, I really wasn't up on like devotional, like Alice Coltrane music, like her sort of devotional era. And then you better believe I was like all over that. Like I like, it was just like from moment to moment, it was like, okay, I've heard all the like impulse stuff and like, okay, cool, to like, oh my God, where's like the next like super deep cut, like 200 views on YouTube, like how do I find more of this? Cause this is crazy. Like, yeah, I got so sucked into like the Alice universe. I mean, I would say the only reason there isn't Alice Coltrane cover on the record is just I would have just spent months like sitting in my house like going, well, which one? Like, you know, like that's another huge compositional sort of like sort of person I sort of call out to. Just so much, such a profound influence. I think I even, while we were going into mixing this record, I sent like required listening to like the engineers, and I was like, Kariya sings. Same. like literally, if we can make anything sound even remotely this,
yeah,
I would be so happy. Like such a ear brain opening. Just imagining like a flower like growing from the center of my brain, like just
when I think about like, because I, you know, we talked about this, but like I wrote about your music many years ago.
Yeah.
I connect very deeply with your music, and this, it all makes sense. Like Alice is, I mean, I've made this stupid joke on this show a couple times, but of imagine being John Coltrane and you're still only the second best Coltrane that there ever
was. Listen, I'm right there with you, man. Like I think I've put like playlists together where I'm like, okay, some Train's got to be in this list, but it's probably not John. It's probably not John.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, but like, if yeah, Alice is
starting to get her flowers finally.
I know, I thankfully, like we're it's so overdue, and it's severely. There's a lot of ground to make up, but like, man, and I'm still living in hope that they release the original.
Listen, if anyone's listening with that power or sway, please, oh my God, like I just like I'll have numerous copies, like, you know, like you'll get money from me, like you'll get money from me.
That was, gosh, whenever that reissue, whatever you want to call it, came out, that was such a roller coaster.
Oh yeah,
like, oh my God, it's finally happening, wait, what?
No, I know
and it's beautiful in its own way, like,
oh, yeah
you know, but it's the original, it's the one, it's
yeah, with the string, with the strings, yeah. Oh my,
the strings,
oh,
and the synths,
oh my, oh my, oh my God. So yeah, literally perfect music. Yeah, it's right, it's angelic. I mean, it's like
yeah, and this is God, this song too is, it's so powerful, just like the cadence of her,
oh I know,
singing is,
and her voice, yeah, I mean, it's her voice it's like, ah,
yeah. Huh, it feels like it just comes from like time immemorial. Like she's tapped and she's connect. She is part of, I don't know, and is the conduit for us to experience.
Like, hear it through. Yeah, absolutely. No, absolutely. Yeah. We are very lucky to live in this timeline.
I know.
Where like this happened and yay.
It's like, this can't be the worst timeline. We got Alice Coltrane.
right. Like,
the worst timeline is the one where she's not in it. So
Right.
okay. Well, I could do a whole like Alice Coltrane episode, and maybe someday I will.
Listen.
But What are your favorite lyrics? Are lyrics a thing that you pay a lot of attention to? Is like an important thing to you?
So I'm so glad this has come up because I have a problem. Like I basically can't listen to music with lyrics, mostly because it's like a mood thing. So you know, for like daydreaming is beautiful because it's a song that like kind of regardless of where I'm at, I just sort of instantly get sucked into Aretha's world. But like. I don't know, man. I love like R&B and soul and stuff like this, but I'm like, bro, I'm not always feeling this in love. I'm not always feeling this depressed. I'm not always feeling this happy.
Right,
like,
right.
It's like hard for me to listen to a song that is lyrically like orthogonal to how I'm feeling. Right.
Absolutely.
So yeah, and then right, and then I'm like a huge like hip-hop/rap fan, right? So it's even like, you know, sometimes it's either like no lyrics or like this is a 7-minute like verse that I memorized,
right?
And you know, I'm sort of inflecting in the same way.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's either like no lyrics at all or like
the
whole song, right? The whole song is just lyrics. But you know, I am, you know, a poet, in addition to all my other hat wearings. So I do very much care about like lyric and verse, like, mm-hmm. you know, just in general. So for this one, I picked, original Phoebus Fables, which is a Charles Mingus tune that is, very political. Actually, this one has a special place in my heart. Also Jamie related because imagine how starstruck I was when the day we met, she went home and listened to one of my projects and, you know, texted me like, hey, I like your version of like, you know, Fables of Phoebus or whatever. And I was like, this is so unreal. Like, I remember being on your Wikipedia page once and being like, this Jamie Branch person, so cool. That was awesome. Super surreal for me. But this version of the song is, of course, the version he wanted to record in Columbia Records and let him because... it's far too political. I would say all the lyrics on this song are pretty you know, boo Nazi fascist supremacists. Can you argue with that? Like, I think for me, in this case, it's like I had become very familiar with the non-lyrical version of the song before ever discovering the lyrical version of the song. And I really like how the actual, like, the melody is almost like words. Like, there are, in some cases, for my songs even, technically lyrics, in quotes. but where they're kind of very much like the melody sort of sung in lyric. Cool form, and I don't know if you guys will ever hear those versions, but you know, it's like there's a lot of it that is sort of like the song itself feels like it's very much satire, and sort of trying to sort of invoke like sort of a deplorable figure in a certain way, and then of course with the lyric, like you know, it's like almost funny, like 2, 4, 6, 8, they brainwash and teach you hate is like almost like a crazy spin on like any other 2, 4, 6, 8 chant you've ever heard.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so it's yeah, I personally yeah, I really can't argue with any of the lyrical content on this
one, you know. I was so familiar with the instrumental version for so long, and then hearing this version, it was kind of, it's like, man, fuck you, Columbia Records. You deprived people of this for a long time. I think it, like, Mingus was, I think the second, this may have been like one of the, I don't know, a Mingus record was like the second ever jazz record I heard. One of my friends, it was like
sick,
and I mean I still sometimes like listen to the way he wrote and stuff, and it doesn't make sense to me in a way, like, which is such a, I talk about this all the time, like music that sort of confuses me is music that I'm so drawn to, I'm just like, this doesn't make sense, and it does. Like,
oh yeah. I think that's a great way to describe me, because it's almost like not over your head, although you're like, wait a minute, how did wait, what? honestly, probably like if I was forced to pick a favorite jazz musician,
yeah,
probably is Mingus. You know, I think that's a like just his way with band writing, mm-hmm. band style. Right, I hope to one day be that level, frankly.
Right.
Yeah.
I And for anybody listening to the, if you had, so the third episode of the show, Eric Mingus was the guest.
Oh, nice.
And I highly recommend people, if you're a fan of Charles Mingus, like he told some great stories about it, like growing up,
right,
about his dad and stuff that there was like, yeah, some of the things that he said, it was just like wisdom from Charles Mingus that I'd never heard before. It was like, okay, this is good enough for Charles Mingus. It's good enough for me.
No, man, I got to top it myself.
But yeah, this song, I hope people are familiar with this version of it, because it just, I don't know, it's on a different level in a way. Yeah.
Probably the best thing I've ever done for the like generation that follows me is I got my U.S. history teacher who had a degree in art history to start incorporating the song as a part of his lesson on the day of, when, you know, when he discusses like sort of the integration sort of uh-huh. whole thing, and so like there's a whole bunch of high schoolers who now because of me are getting this like as part of the lesson, like as part of the like this is how this went in this country, you know.
That is awesome. Well,
yeah,
hey, if nothing else, you've done that.
Yes, listen. Pat myself on the back about that sometimes.
So what song have you or can you listen to the most?
So this one, I kind of actually just went on my like Bandcamp app and like sorted by most played. In this case, and actually this doesn't surprise me at all, but this one is Molecular by James Brandon Lewis. That whole record is just so good. I talked about Elvin Jones earlier, but another one of my just like absolute favorite drummers is Chad Taylor. I just like,
yeah,
I also, you know, was in Fly or Die, but oh my god, like anything Chad touches is basically perfect. And then this particular group is like insane, and I think like Molecular came out in like 2020. I just had like, you know, frankly a little bit more time to like, you know, sit with music than I maybe had at 19. This one just got like if I had it on vinyl, I probably would have like worn out the grooves on this particular tune. Like I somehow can never get tired of this. I like, it's a weird thing to describe as like a song I like play in the shower, but it's like a song I like play in the shower, like, you know, something just makes you feel great. Like it makes me feel like I'm like starting something, and then even in my own personal myth, I fortunately had the great pleasure of actually telling James this, like, you know, in person once, is like, you know, I am a bioinformatician, I do care about molecular biology, so it was like very like near and dear to me. I was kind of like, whoa, this
all my world's coming together,
right? This is like so on brand for me. So all of that, like, yeah, and actually, I think the first show I ever played was a Standing on the Corner gig where we opened for, I guess, like Alan Rothman, and at the time that was like right after the first record he did with James Randall Lewis and a bunch of you know, more like sort of more contemporary artists after, you know, years of sort of not being in the spotlight. So James Randall Lewis has sort of always been really just one degree away from me in some respects, and then this was just like way too on brand, like just severely, like I'm just like, oh, okay, well, Molecular, sure.
He always feels like somebody, he seemed like comfortable playing in anything, like,
yeah.
And but his tone is so recognizable,
yeah,
so it's like, and which is such a, I feel like such a hard like needle to thread of, you know, it's like he could show up doing, I don't know, like making like a bop record, and then he can show up doing like free jazz, and it's like, oh, but that sounds like James.
Oh yeah. I mean, but like he just did one with like the Mesthetics or something like that. Yeah. Just like, yeah. How can you just do anything? That's not fair. That's really not fair.
I know.
Leave some room for the rest of us, bro. Right.
What's a song that you recently fell in love with?
Yeah, so this one is a re-falling in love. Man, I'm so happy that this is like now accessible to the world. So this one's Elegante by Abdou Salim. And the reason this is a re-falling in love is, you know, in my YouTube deep dives, I'd heard a version of this that was part of like a documentary that was made about him that like, you know, like I'd have to skip to a certain timestamp in like a particular video and like I'd listen to the song and like that was like my only way of experiencing this song for years. And then randomly, like a couple weeks ago, like just somehow through the force, I knew that it like been like uploaded to like YouTube and streaming platform, like a version of the song that is like just the song, just like standalone the song. I think when I found it on YouTube, it was still at like 95 plays, and I think half the plays above that presently exist are, I mean, just playing it on different people's computers, like you gotta listen to this. And you know, that weekend that I re-found it, I guess I like learned how to play it on like all of my instruments. Awesome. Like, you know, I was just like, I'm so obsessed with this tune. It is just one of those, like, it's such an earworm. It's so like groovy and listenable and beautiful. And I think the story goes, he wrote it for, you know, someone who he was, you know, in love with, and he actually learned to play the flute in order to play the song. And that's also very new to me because, you know, I just pick up instruments here and there. And so just to think that like, you could like be like, well, I want to write this lady a tune and I'm gonna put the legwork in of learning a whole new thing.
But it's gotta be on flute. Right. Do I play the flute? No. But it's gotta be on flute.
Right.
That's amazing. So,
yeah, so that's this one, like, yeah, probably another one of those things that's gonna be forever something I'm pushing to everyone I know to listen to it and enjoy it. And
well, full disclosure, I'd never heard this before until now. And I think I've listened to it at least a dozen times since I got your list yesterday. God, right. Yeah. Like, I was just listening to it on repeat because it is, I don't know, like, it's like intoxicating is the word I keep coming. It's just, it like washes over you and you're in, that groove is, and then the flute and then,
And this particular arrangement of it, it's like a flute, trombone, trumpet, but in that, like sort of front line. But in that like little video that I was sort of going back to for a while, it's actually three flutes as a front line, and it's nuts. It's literally insane. I'll have to send it to you just so you can do what I'm doing and go back to the video and skip to the timestamp and
God, yeah, release that version. Come on,
yeah, please.
Give the people what they want,
please.
Okay, well, last two questions. Yes. Here we go. So what is the song that means the most to you? Not necessarily because of the song itself, but you associate it with something or someone.
Right. Yeah, so this one, I'm going to have to give a shout out to my pops, biggest Prince fan I think I've ever known. This one's Purple Rain by Prince. The joke goes that it's his favorite album, song, and movie. you know, I actually have maybe less to say about the song than I do have to about his like sort of relationship to it. Like, didn't know what air guitar was, but I do have memories of my dad like air guitaring the song.
Yeah.
You know, I like still don't quite know what Purple Rain is, but you know, it's like it's so like fundamental, like in my brain, like, this could have been the answer to like, what's the first song you remember? But I just kind of knew chronologically, I probably hadn't yet committed the entirety of Purple Rain to my brain yet, you know, when I was like 3 years old or whatever. But yeah, I mean, and just as far as my dad goes, you know, he's a stand-up role model. Like, I think, I don't think I would be as sensitive or, you know, there wasn't a lot of like hyper masculinity in the, you know what I mean? It's like our favorite artist is Prince. Like, you know what I mean? Like we're like, you know what I mean? We're not worried about like if it's okay to wear heels or like, you know, dress certain ways or express yourself certain ways. And you know, so like it just like I feel like, yeah, I would be really remiss to not have picked this for this entry. just in the way that like I feel so lucky that I you know, I didn't spend like my early 20s unlearning, like, you know, right, just like bullshit, like, you know, I'm sorry, yeah. I don't know if I can, I'm not sure if I can swear on here, but yeah, just like there was, right, like, again, Prince is like a well-respected icon in my house, like that's where we're at with Prince, you know.
I love that. Yeah, I don't know what to say about, I mean, I think I've had a couple of people make the case it's like the greatest song ever, and I'm not going to argue.
Right, it's again, like you could probably argue that, like,
yeah. And just yeah. Well, what is, at least at this moment in time, what is your favorite song?
Yeah. So this was actually probably the hardest one for me, because this is like, are you kidding? Is one?
Yeah. Right.
And then even my answer is sort of not an answer. So it's track A, Solo Dancer, from The Black Saint and Sinner Lady, which is arguably my favorite album.
I think you can make a pretty good case that that's like the greatest album ever made.
Right. I think for me, my Desert Island album, if I could only have one for the rest of my life, it's like I'm always sort of like Ascension, The Black Saint and Sinner Lady. Ascension, The Black Saint and Sinner Lady. Ascension, The Black Saint and Sinner Lady. And what's interesting is, as far as I can tell, I'm not sure if Mingus or Coltrane were really that into each other, like, ever.
I know.
I thought
it's weird.
Yeah, but, you know, man, like, I can't even... So, yeah, so what I mean by my answer is, like, a non-answer is, the real answer is that whole record.
Yeah, right.
But since he did break it in two songs, I just picked the first one. yeah, I don't know. This was like, yeah, I mean, like, the record starts and ends in the same way. Like, Danny Richmond on drums, another one of my great favorite drummers, like, just really kind of keeping the proceedings going, and just like the, I don't know what, like, I don't know if there's like a good adjective for this, but like kind of like the, like, richness slash kind of almost like raunchiness of, like, sort of just like the, like, sax section, like, there's just something so like driving, and you know, I do know that it turns out that this is one that some people, even Mingus fans, are sort of like, I don't know, it's like too happening for me.
But I know, like, that always blows my mind.
Right, it like throws me for a loop too, but it's like there's the flamenco guitar that pops up somewhere on this record, and you're just like, wait, what? There's the trombones that sound like they're kind of screaming human voices, yeah, somewhere on this record. There's
a tuba.
Right. You know what I mean? It's like you're just like, wait a minute. What? Like are other people making this? Like, cool, like, I honestly think they should be playing this for like 5-year-olds in like kindergarten. Yeah. I personally, this is like, this is just one of those records that like always gets me. So yeah, track A, Solo Dancer, like, I can't even describe, like, there's not more perfect. Man, you know what I even realized? You can listen to the whole record cover to cover and listen to a totally different thing, like each time, and be just right, blown away. Like it was probably my 50th listen that I actually decided, well, let me listen to the bass. You know, like Mingus is a bass player. Let me actually just like hone in on the bass. And then I was listening to the bass and I was like, well, this is an insanely good performance. And you know, then I was like, maybe I'll just focus on the trumpets this next time around. It's like, okay. The trumpets are just doing their thing. Like, you know? It's like you can let the whole record wash over you, or like just zoom in. Yeah. And it's insane. I really don't have words for this one. This is like a, go listen to it. It's like, you know, like, right, like, if I just, nothing is nearly as epic in some respects to me.
Yeah, I mean, this is prime example of like, I don't understand.
Right.
How does a brain conceive of this?
No, I,
and you know, I mean, that's why, you know, he's, yeah, Charles Mingus. Right. But and the way, like, because again, if you just, and it's so hard to describe, but you describe it to somebody and people are just gonna be like, what?
Yeah.
And then you hear it, and I mean, obviously, I guess some people don't like it, which I don't understand.
Makes no sense.
Like, to me, it's like you hear it and it's just, oh my God, this is, I've never heard anything like this. This is one of the most incredible things I've ever, like, I need, and like you were saying, like listening to, you can listen to a different thing every time. And it's because it's one of those where it's like, I want to know everything about this because I've listened to it a million times.
Yeah, same.
I still don't understand it.
No. I think once I start understanding it, one, it's probably been another like 50 years. Right. And then two, like life gets less interesting. Like, yeah. You know, like it's like the wonder exactly. that this incites in me. I don't want that to ever wane, and it really hasn't. Like I can listen to it like four times a day. I'm not gonna be any less like moved by just like, I mean, especially like, I think the thing that really tied it together for me was realizing that that last like sidelong piece revisits all of the previous pieces on the first side. And it's sort of like kind of bringing you back to like, sort of like, just like there's a rise and there's such a narrative. There's such a like, it's just like, oh my God, bro. Like how? And like, I don't know, you read the liner notes and he's like, yeah, I had all the saxophone players like playing to like one mic and they're like positioned like in like a V in relation to each other. And you're like, what is your brain? can I get a sliver of that level of like,
I know,
just like tapped into sound? Like,
give me an ounce of that and I'll be set for life.
Yeah, it's probably more than a lifetime's worth. Yeah, and that sounds like a lot. Like,
yeah, right. Oh man. I got nothing else to say.
Yeah.
Well, this was an absolute blast.
Yes.
I'm so glad that we did this.
Yes,
and like I said, when I got this list, I was like, yeah, okay, it's starting to make sense why I like your music so much, because this is
listen, if I can insert one final thing, I'm a band leader and all of these other things, but I'm also just a music fan. That's actually something that I think I wish people like felt like that was a thing that they should like say more. Like I love music. I'm a musician and I like music. I mean, like, I go to shows, I scream, you know, I'm like right. Like, you know, like I would not be making music worth listening to, I don't think, if I wasn't like absorbing all the music around me, like, and just trying to sort of like synergize and sort of digest like all of this. Like, again, like, it's like, why don't people play covers anymore? Because you're the greatest musician ever? Dog, probably not. Like,
right.
You know, like, and anyone you even hold in that regard, hold someone else in that regard, right? Like,
right.
You know, so it's like Mingus will be like Ellington, you know, like, you know, like,
right.
Or like whatever it is. So,
maybe not Miles, but
no. Miles is maybe
the only Miles thinks Miles is the greatest. Yeah,
But that's about it. That's about it. Yeah. I think everyone else is like, dog, okay, my music's okay.
Yeah, but go listen to this guy.
It's right, cool. Right. Yeah. And that's the thing, you know, I'll go up to people after their shows and I'll be like, hey, I super loved that. And, oh, I listened to this record of yours. I can't tell you how many times people have been like, oh, you like that one? Oh,
I know. Thank
you. You know, and I'm like, what? You don't like it? You don't think that's a brilliant thing you did there? Like, you just recorded an A about it? Like, you know.
But I think that's another good point. Is like, if something, like, tell people. Because I think that's another thing, like, as a musician, you don't hear it very much. You know, and it's like, I think that's such an important thing, too. It's like, yeah, like, I'm just a fan. I'm obsessed with music. But tell people, like, hey, you made this record that was meant a lot to me. God, that means the fucking world.
Oh, yeah.
This was great. Yeah. Everybody, go A Willed and Conscious Balance, November 1st, International Anthem.
Yes.
Pick it up.
Please.
You guys doing any shows or anything?
Yeah, so November 11th, we're doing a show in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Music School. I used to take dance lessons there as a kid.
Nice.
So it's actually the first stage I ever performed on. And so this is very, very full circle. So we're going to do that one. I don't always... I mean, seven people is very hard to coordinate.
Sure.
I don't necessarily know that we'll do another like full band gig this year. But I mean, listen, if anyone listening wants to finance some future shows, down, down, left, left, right, A, yeah. B, like, you know, it's just cheat codes. Like, I promise you, like, it sounds good. And I almost don't have as much to do with it as I wish I did. Like, these are, it's a dream team. It's a dream team.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Yeah. But November 11th, that's also the streaming day. So, you know, yeah, for those of you who are allergic to Bandcamp, right? You know, you know, that's my diplomatic way of saying that. But yeah, so I would love to see anyone who wants to come out there. I'm really excited about it. I think it's going to be a lovely, lovely, lovely time.
Once again, thank you to Tomeen for taking the time out, putting together a beautiful list of songs. And he was even under the weather in the lead up to this, and so still pushed through and got his list together. Check out those songs playlist at the link in the show notes. You've got to hear his records. A Wilden Conscious Balance is the place I would start because it is phenomenal. It's out now on International Anthem. Of course, a link to that in the show notes. Otherwise, hey, thanks for listening. If you enjoy this show, enjoyed this episode, enjoy the show in general, whatever, leave a rating, leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts, all that stuff. Subscribe to the show. I don't even know how that works, but there's a way to do that, I'm sure, on various platforms. But all that stuff helps get it, like, in front of more people so they can discover amazing, wonderful people like Tomeen. And if you really, really, really like it, you can join the Patreon, patreon.com/foxdigitalis for as little as $3 a month. You get the full episodes because there's a whole section I edit out for the main feed, and you get them a week early, and you get a bunch of other stuff, and it just supports the cause, keeps everything going, and it means a lot. So everybody who's done that, thank you, thank you, thank you. That is not for you. Take those few bucks, put it towards picking up a copy of Tomeen's record. Okay, one of them, but both of them would be even better. All right, that's it. Until next time, y'all, keep on listening, whatever the hell you want.